Welcome to Whiskey Cast, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie, and this is episode number 443 for September 21st, 2013. I'm in Bardstown, Kentucky for the annual Kentucky Bourbon Festival this weekend, and coming up in a few minutes...
I'm perfectly happy for as my health goes. I'd like to be better, naturally, but, I'm able to still get around, do some of the things I've always done.
Parker Beam put in a surprise appearance the other night at the Kentucky Distillers Association All-Star Sampler event here in Bardstown and spent the entire evening signing bottles despite his battle with ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. I'll have more with Parker Beam later on Whiskey Cast In Depth, along with the calendar of events, this week's Your Voice segment, and in the What I'm Tasting This Week department, a rare bourbon from the 1950s, all on this episode of Whiskey Cast.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Let's start off with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. There's no doubt that the bourbon industry is one of Kentucky's major economic engines, but we have new proof of that this week. The Kentucky Distillers Association released a new economic impact study from the University of Louisville's Urban Studies Institute on bourbon's impact just in the Louisville area alone. While other employers have lost 10% of their jobs in Kentucky in the recession, bourbon industry employment just in the Louisville area grew by 10%, with nearly 4,200 jobs linked to the bourbon industry. Urban Studies Institute Director Dr. Janet Kelly linked the importance of the findings to the industry's reach worldwide.
Bourbon means growth. It means growth in jobs. It means growth in underlying sectors that are affected, transportation, warehousing. It means for the local economy, it's probably one of the purest punches for economic development that we have because of its net export industry. We sell most of the bourbon that's produced outside the region, and that is a powerful economic multiplier effect.
It's not just the distilleries and the tourism aspect, right?
That's correct. It goes to all manner of cooperage, which I didn't even know what cooperage was until 2 years ago. But there are all kinds of economic activities that are really very peculiar to the bourbon industry that have chosen to make Louisville, the region, their home because of the proximity. And those spinoff effects are powerful.
And it's a lot of small business too, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What was the biggest surprise to you in the findings?
The magnitude of the multiplier. It's a very rare occasion where you see an input into an industry produce about 3.5 times the initial infusion. That's economist talk for a dollar invested in bourbon returns about $375. To the region. And that's because of the export nature of bourbon, and that's because of all of the associated activities with bourbon in the hospitality, tourism, transportation, and other kinds of intermediate industries.
Of course, Louisville's biggest tourism draw is the Kentucky Derby each May, but bourbon creates a year-round impact on the tourism sector. Stacy Yates of the Louisville Convention and Visitors Bureau expects that part of the overall economic impact to keep right on growing, along with the bourbon industry.
I hate to use this pun that there's a buzz, but there really is. In the last several years, the tourism part of the bourbon industry has really kept up with the manufacturing part of it, and of course the international demand for bourbon, and we're just seeing some really exciting things. We're going to have the first public distillery tour that is opening ever, not just since Prohibition, but ever in the city of Louisville when Evan Williams opens in November. And there are about three other distilleries projects that are scheduled to open here in the next 2 years.
That includes the Louisville Distilling, the Angel's Envy project down at the west end of downtown, and Which other ones are coming into Louisville that we know about?
Sure. Michter's Distillery is working on a beautiful jewel box of an old building right on Main Street, right on the original Whiskey Row at the Fort Nelson building. They're anticipated late 2014.
If they get all the historic stuff done, because last I checked with them, that building was barely standing and they were still going to have to do a lot of renovation before it was ready.
That's right. They had a retaining wall that they had to secure, so that was their major obstacle. I think things are moving along now. They're producing in Louisville, actually, on Dixie Highway, not too far from where we're speaking right now, but they hope to have that visitor center experience open late 14. Then a craft distiller is going to be opening at 10th and Main, so still in that Bourbon District corridor, that original corridor, called Peerless Distillery. And this is a fourth generation bourbon distilling family that is resurrecting a pre-prohibition brand called Peerless Bourbon. They just announced that they're coming, and I believe that is a late 14, early 15 project as well.
Why the renaissance all of a sudden down on Whiskey Row in Louisville? Because this is really a historic site that has come back now, right?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't think we can take all the credit in tourism at the CVB, but certainly I think we've shown a spotlight on it. It's been sort of a perfect storm. We started promoting Louisville as the gateway to bourbon country in 2007 and started adding product like an urban bourbon trail, which is basically a pub crawl for bourbon bars, and really just started marketing that whole idea that you should come to Kentucky for a bourbon country experience, hoping that you start in Louisville and sending you out on your way to great towns like Bardstown and Loretto and Frankfort for the distillery experiences. And then it just, this rush started coming. I mean, like I said, the buzz was created and the demand was created because people were drinking bourbon again. And that's all due to the great bourbon brands and their premiumization of the product and the cocktail resurgence. You know, just a lot of things. Like I said, it's kind of like capturing lightning in a bottle. It really is. And now I think people have seen that there is something to it, that there is a demand not only for the consumption of bourbon, but also the lifestyle of the bourbon culture that Kentucky has and the wonderful vacation experience that can be found with it. So I think that's really what is driving demand and driving development, certainly in downtown Louisville.
Stacy mentioned the new Louisville Distilling Company project. Of course, that's the Angel's Envy Distillery, which was the pride and joy of Lincoln Henderson, the creator of Angel's Envy. As I reported last time around, Lincoln passed away last week. His son Wes, who runs the Louisville Distilling Company, was on hand for the study's release on Friday.
We're on the heels of the wonderful things that the KDA has been doing for years here, and Brown-Forman blazed the trail, and you know, we're just the new kid on the block, so we're going to continue to move forward with our distillery, and we're in the final planning phases and the engineering and everything like that, and hope to be open within 14 months or so.
You could have built this anywhere in Kentucky. Why did you decide to do it in Louisville?
It was really kind of a no-brainer for us when we really started looking at the different locations. I was a little fascinated originally with some of the historic locations like the old Taylor Distillery and other romantic abandoned properties. But when we really looked at the dynamics that were happening in downtown Louisville and we looked at the sheer numbers of people that come here, it just really made sense to locate it here.
Let's talk about your dad now. Of course, we know Lincoln passed away a few days ago. And one, it was not only a blessing for him to see your son's wedding, but also to see the groundbreaking at the new distillery, because I know he was sort of the driving force behind that, right?
Absolutely. Dad's the inspiration behind everything we do every day, and you know, the world definitely lost a great ambassador for bourbon, a great whiskey mind, and a great father, grandfather, and husband. So, you know, we'll continue every day to do what we do, and we'll think about how Dad would want it done, and you know, stick with his methods of perfection, and but at the same time, we'll honor history and we'll innovate. We'll do stuff that's new and different in his honor.
And one of those things was the release of the cask strength that ironically was scheduled for last week before he got sick. And I know he was especially proud of that one, right?
Absolutely. Dad was very proud of the cask strength. And it's really been cool how it's evolved. And with the last couple of cask strength releases, Dad's given us a lot of latitude, myself and Kyle, to really get into the selection process and the barrel selection process. And with this year's release, you know, we... Dad was kind enough to let us go in and make those personal selections, and he, at the end of the day, he said, "Wow, you guys did a great job," and that's the best blessing I could ever get. You know, was a blessing from Dad on this year's cask strength.
I'll have tasting notes for the Angel's Envy cask strength on an upcoming episode of Whiskey Cast. The news conference was held at Brown-Forman's headquarters on the west side of Louisville, about an hour away from Woodford Reserve's distillery in Versailles. Earlier this week, Chris Morris unveiled this year's Woodford Reserve Masters Collection release in a webcast. It's actually two different releases. What's more, they're not bourbons, but single malt whiskeys.
We started working on this project over 9 years ago. So we were confident we were making malt whiskey before anybody else was in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. And we did a lot of research, and we know there were malt whiskey brands from Kentucky prior to Prohibition. And we thought we'd bring that genre back. And what is also a point of pride is the first malting house in the state of Kentucky was in Woodford County back in 1785. So Woodford County has a history of malting. So the history winds were just blowing the right way for us. We made our malt, and I put half the spirit in used barrels that had previously held Woodford Reserve, and we call that our classic malt. So that's more in a maturation profile that you would find in the Scotch and Irish malt whiskey traditions. Of course, no smoke in ours. We don't have any port or sherry cask additions to that batch. It's all used cooperage, bourbon oak. And then we put the rest of the spirit in new charred barrels, with reserve barrels, and that's our straight malt, our Kentucky straight malt. So it has a dark hue similar to Woodford Reserve, and it has, I think, created a bridge between malt whiskey, as most people know it, and bourbon whiskey, because it's the only fully matured Kentucky straight malt whiskey, as far as I know, since before Prohibition.
And as with a couple of the previous expressions for the Masters Collection, you're sending this one out more widely around the world than they used to, right?
Yes, there's a tremendous demand for the Masters Collection, which means as a result to be less available in the United States because we only make so much, and each bottle is numbered. And we are having huge demand in Australia, demand in France, demand in Europe, and we only have so much.
Over lunch, Chris opened up a bottle of the first single-barrel bourbon from Kentucky. I'll have my tasting notes for it later on in this episode, and I'll have tasting notes for this year's Masters Collection whiskeys on an upcoming episode. In other news, the Kentucky Distillers Association welcomed two new members into the Bourbon Hall of Fame Friday. Fred Noe, the seventh generation of the Beam family at Jim Beam and the company's global brand ambassador, and Tom Blinko, a guy you've never heard of, but he's had a massive impact on the bourbon industry. Tom runs Busick Construction in Bardstown. His company has built rickhouses over the last dozen or so years that hold 1 million barrels of whiskey. Along with most of the distillery and visitors center construction projects in Kentucky over the last decade. We'll hear from both of them on this weekend's bonus episode of WhiskeyCast. The whiskey industry lost another icon this week. John Black was one of those unsung heroes who spent his career in the shadows, but had a massive impact on the whiskey we drink today. John worked at a dozen different distilleries in Scotland during his 55 years in the industry and finished up his career reviving Tullibardine. As we reported back in January, John took a leave of absence at the end of last year because of illness. He passed away at his home in Forest this week at the age of 72. Our condolences go out to John's family and his many friends in the industry. By the way, you can hear my interview with John from way back in 2006 in episode 29 of WhiskeyCast. Earlier this year, we mourned the sudden passing of Truman Cox, who spent most of his career at Buffalo Trace here in Kentucky before being named master distiller at Sazerac's A. Smith Bowman Distillery in Virginia. Truman's successor was named this week. Brian Pruitt comes from E&J Distilleries in California and cut his teeth working at the Great Divide Brewing Company and New Belgium Brewing in Colorado. The Scotch Whiskey Association's Gavin Hewitt has been planning to retire at the end of the year. The SWA has now named another former UK diplomat to replace Gavin. David Frost currently heads up European Trade and International Affairs in the UK's Department of Business, Innovation and Skills, and was a former ambassador to Denmark, as well as a key diplomat in the UK's missions at the United Nations and the European Union. He'll become the SWA's new chief executive on January 2nd. White & Mackay has a new CEO, and while the last one raised eyebrows for his brief tenure, this one may raise even more eyebrows. Brian Donaghy ran Diageo's UK operations for many years before he was transferred to a global supply post earlier this year. He left Diageo suddenly a few days ago and was named White & Mackay's new CEO earlier this week. He replaces John Beard, who was on the job for less than a week in August, before departing with no public reason given. Of course, the UK's Office of Fair Trading is still reviewing Diageo's acquisition of a controlling interest in White & Mackay parent United Spirits, and Diageo has pledged to have no role in White & Mackay's day-to-day affairs while that review is underway. There's been no word from the Office of Fair Trading on whether the appointment may raise any red flags. Diageo has only said that Donaghy severed his ties with the company. Now, those are just some of the stories making headlines this week. I'll have more news on this weekend's bonus edition of WhiskeyCast. And, of course, you can keep up with the latest whiskey news all week long at WhiskeyCast.com.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie. Help us select the next Glenmorangie single malt whiskey with the Glenmorangie Caskmasters project. Sign up online through the Glenmorangie Facebook page or on glenmorangie.com.
Don't forget about the Bourbon Heritage Month special going on through September 30th in the WhiskeyCast Photo Gallery. With every order of $100 or more, you'll receive a free 11x14-inch print of the Rickhouse. And I'm donating 20% of all orders this month to the ALS Association's Parker Beams Promise of Hope Fund. You'll find the gallery in the mall section at WhiskeyCast.com. I'm only halfway through a very busy month on the road. Next weekend, I'll be in Grimsby, Ontario for 40 Creek Distillery's annual Whiskey Weekend. While the tasting panels I'm doing with John Hall, Davin DeKergamo, and Joanne McGinnis are sold out, I hope you'll still come out and say hello if you're in the area. The Your Voice segment this time around is brought to you by Highland Park. This month's WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings episode features my son-in-law, Colton Smith, and a couple of his fellow U.S. Marines tasting a flight of flavored whiskeys. David Bowman posted this comment on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page. Mark, I just wanted to tell you that I very much enjoyed the latest virtual tasting. As an old Marine, it was very enjoyable to hear those young devil dogs tasting and commenting. On another note, last year I was lucky enough to win a Brookladdie still print in a contest. My kitchen has now been renovated, the print framed and is hanging proudly. The second side of this, Brookladdie is the only Islay whiskey that I haven't tried. My wife went to England last month to visit her brother, and he sent home a bottle for me. Turns out I have bottled 989 out of 2,500 of the Brookladdie Ancient Regime. I'm now waiting for a special occasion to crack it open. The latest virtual tasting has inspired that to be November 10th, the Marine Corps birthday. Thank you for all that you do. Well, David, thank you for the kind words and for your service. Last week's interview with Brookladdie Managing Director Simon Coughlin brought this response from our buddy Matt Wooler in Australia. After such a big thing for the Laddie 10, to now be diminished is a real shame, but I've personally noted a really strange change in everything Laddie since the takeover. PR and marketing has really swung, as had the language attitudes in press releases and news and Laddie blog posts. Our curiosity is justified, I think, in these changes, a bit like there is a giant expanding inside of a Brookladdie skin that can't quite contain itself anymore. Seams are popping and bits are poking through. Or maybe like you just jumped into your car and you know someone has adjusted your seat and mirrors ever so slightly. It's unnerving. Well, Matt, I think the growing pains are probably natural. After years of seeing Brookladdie sort of as a gawky teenager, it's hard to get used to viewing the distillery as an adult. But I think we're going to have to get used to it. Now, if you have a question, suggestion, or something else you'd like to share with whiskey lovers around the world, you can always post it on the Your Voice page at WhiskeyCast.com or on our Facebook page. Your Voice is sponsored this time around by Highland Park.
My name is Daryl Haldane, Global Brand Advocate for Highland Park. Go onto our website, highlandpark.co.uk, and upload your photo at Inner Circle to have your face on the walls of the Highland Park Distillery.
Time now for the calendar of events brought to you as always by Laphroaig. Mike Veitch will be leading a Filson Bourbon Academy class at the Columbia Yacht Club in Chicago on Tuesday night. There are a bunch of Filson classes coming up over the next few weeks around the Midwestern U.S. More on that during our bonus episode this weekend. Caden Heads in Cologne, Germany has a whiskey tasting coming up on the 27th. Whiskey Fest San Francisco is that same night. And the Whiskey by the Sea Festival in Vlissingen, the Netherlands, is on the 28th. The Stockholm Beer and Whiskey Festival kicks off the first of two weekends this coming weekend. There's also Whiskey Live Paris this coming weekend, along with the Autumn Speyside Whiskey Festival and Hopscotch in Vancouver, British Columbia. Wish I could be at all of them. But those are just some of the more than 300 whiskey events you'll find on the calendar at WhiskeyCast.com. It's brought to you by Laphroaig. Don't forget about the Laphroaig Live webcast on Thursday night from Brooklyn, New York. You can get all of the details at Laphroaig.com/live. And while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Islay.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Billy Lighton, Master Blender, Redbreast Single Pot Still Irish Whiskey.
The sherry butts in particular have a big impact on the flavour of Redbreast. It gives it the deep, dried, fruity notes, which is probably the signature of Redbreast. Take a sip, hold it in my mouth for minutes, and just dissect it and pick up all the little fruity notes. There's something that I didn't notice before. Whenever you leave your glass of Redbreast sitting there for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you can go back to it and go, oh, something's changed there. Why is that changing? How is it changing? Is this something that I should be picking up on, you know? It's fascinating. And, I mean, I've been in the business 34 years and it still excites me, you know, things like this.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
This week, Whiskey Magazine announced the 2014 U.S. Icons of Whiskey Award winners, and this year's Distillery Manager of the Year is none other than Parker Beam of Heaven Hill. Of course, Parker was diagnosed earlier this year with ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. And this year's Parker's Heritage Collection bourbon is named Promise of Hope. It's expected to raise at least $250,000 for the ALS Association's Parker Beam's Promise of Hope Fund. Wednesday night, the Kentucky Distillers Association held its all-star bourbon sampler in Bardstown with master distillers from all of the KDA member distilleries on hand. They weren't expecting Parker that night. Craig Beam was scheduled to come from Heaven Hill. But not only did Parker show up, he stayed the entire evening, signing autographs and talking with everyone who wanted to spend a few minutes with him. We chatted for a few minutes. It's clear that while ALS has already taken some of Parker's physical ability, he hasn't lost any of his spirit. Here's this week's Whiskey Cast In Depth. How are you feeling? How are you doing?
Well, you know, I'm not as good as I once was, but, you know, for 72, I'm relatively good. I'm able to do a lot of things I enjoy doing, which is still making bourbon every day and keep my hand in all that good stuff that goes into it.
How much are you doing at the distillery? Are you able to go in at least a couple of days a week?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I deal with something every day at the plant. Yeah. There's hardly a day goes by that I don't have something to deal with.
Are you surprised by the outpouring of support you've received in the last 9 months or so?
Yeah, it's overwhelming. You know, I really appreciate all that support I've gotten. You know, it's been sort of unbelievable, all the support that everybody's given me.
Tell me about the Master Distillers Unity. Was that sort of the biggest thing for you when your fellow distillers came together and put together their whiskeys to help you?
Yeah, that's been a godsend blessing as far as I'm concerned. It shows the unity that we've always had. It's been one of those things that I knew that you could call on any one of the group and, you know, it would be an outpouring of blessing no matter what you needed. Where it was production tied to something in production or anything, you could always call on that group for support.
Now, with this year's Parker's Heritage Collection, you've been holding out on us because this may have been the best one yet.
Well, they're all good, you know. So it's not hard to select from all the stocks we have. they've all been so damn good over the years that that's made my job easy. I said when we ran off the still, it had to be good or we didn't produce it. You know, so we didn't put it in the barrel to lay there that long and not knowing what we had.
Are you doing okay personally? Are you happy? Are you content? How are things going for you?
You know, I'm relatively happy far as my health goes. I'd like to be better, naturally, but, you know, I'm able to still get around, do some of the things I've always done. But this age has a way of limiting some of that, see. Then with the ALS, you're a little more limited, I guess. So, you know, I'm still able to do a lot of the functions I've always enjoyed.
How much did you know about ALS before they told you you had it?
Well, I just knew that, you know, that it was a low Lou Gehrig disease and, you know, muscle deterioration and all that. So that's really, I've learned a lot. Naturally, you would, what, you know, once you've been diagnosed with it. But it's different stages that it affects a lot of people a lot of different ways. I've learned that. As my doctor said, you've been like that, you know. He said, your stages have been very minor, you know, which is good in my case.
Thank you very much, Parker. There's a link on the WhiskeyCast website for the ALS Association's Parker Beam's Promise of Hope Fund. The Master Distiller's Unity bottles that will be auctioned at Bonhams on October 13th will help raise money for that fund. And as I mentioned earlier, the goal is to raise at least $250,000 for ALS research through sales of this year's Parker's Heritage Collection bourbon. Once again, I'm donating 20% of all sales this month in the WhiskeyCast photo gallery to the Promise of Hope Fund as well. And that's this week's WhiskeyCast In Depth. There's just one whiskey in the What I'm Tasting This Week department this time around. After the KDA's news conference Friday at Brown-Forman's headquarters in Louisville, I was invited to join some of the KDA executives and Brown-Forman master distiller Chris Morris for lunch and a private tasting. Chris brought out a rare whiskey that the company had just reacquired. Decades before Blanton's became the first mass-marketed single-barrel bourbon, Brown-Forman was selling Old Forester, the President's Choice. The barrels were handpicked by company president George Garvin Brown II and sold by the barrel to what we'd call today high-net-worth individuals. John Wayne is known to have had some, along with other celebrities, corporate executives, and the like. The company stopped selling the President's Choice when Brown died in 1968, 16 years before Blanton's went on sale. Edward Shotland was a banker in North Carolina and acquired a barrel of the President's Choice from the 1950s. His family had one case left, and Brown-Forman recently bought it from the family. Chris Morris opened one up for us over lunch. The exact details on the barrel are buried in the company archive, but the whiskey was bottled at 59.3% ABV, and the foil covering the cork was so thick that Chris had to get a really sharp knife to cut it. The nose has notes of mild cinnamon, cocoa, soft oak, orange peel, and a hint of dried flowers. The taste was just amazing. Rich, full, and spicy with black pepper, cinnamon, and oak. Dried flowers on top as the spices fade, and hints of orange peel. And the finish gets even stronger, then fades out slowly with those dried flowers and orange peel, along with subtle touches of cocoa, oak, and pepper. It's the best bourbon I've ever tasted. I'm scoring Old Forester, the President's Choice, a 98. I just wish I'd brought a sample bottle along with me, because I'll never get another chance to taste it again. Needless to say, I'm adding this tasting note to the searchable list of more than 1,000 different whiskeys at the WhiskeyCast website. That's also where you'll find WhiskeyCast HD and WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings episodes, the calendar of events, news updates, and a complete archive of past episodes, along with a whole lot more. The address is WhiskeyCast.com. My email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2013, and comes to you this week from the Kentucky Bourbon Festival in Bardstown, Kentucky. Don't forget to check back for our bonus episode from Bardstown later this weekend. Production support for this week's episodes comes from Whiskey Magazine. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.